Hey, No Stroke listeners. David and I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to listen to this episode. If you find our podcast valuable, we ask that you consider supporting us with a small monthly donation. You could head over to nostrokepod.com to become a supporter of the show and help David and I continue to create content for listeners in our stroke community around the globe. Now let's get to today's episode.
This is the No Stroke Podcast with your co-hosts, David Dansereau and Michael Garrow, helping you to support and thrive in life after stroke. Their podcast is designed for educational and community support purposes only and should not replace medical treatment and guidance of your own health professional team.
Welcome to episode 69 of the No Stroke Podcast. My name's Dave Dansereau. I'm here with my co-host Michael O'Garrow.
Michael O'Garrow, it is a Paddy's Day weekend here, you know.
I was thinking of that. It's probably like a Christmas for you, right? We got March Madness, and we're recording on a St. Paddy's Day weekend.
I just got a notification here through Apple. They must have been listening. It said St. Patrick's Day tomorrow.
Yes.
But yeah.
Gearing up.
It's a great weekend. It is a great weekend. You know, this time of the year gets a little warmer. The clocks just turned back, brighter out.
Yeah.
We'll be drinking some Guinness this weekend and watching great hoops.
Okay.
I was hoping for a UConn Providence final to the Big East tournament, but we have Marquette and UConn.
Okay. PC didn't survive last night. That's how intense. I'm not sorry.
Yeah. They made a good run. I think they were a seventh seed. Beat Villanova. And then I think they beat, was it that? Did they beat Villanova the other night? I think it was Villanova.
I saw it as far as Georgetown.
They beat Georgetown. Yeah. Sorry. Marquette beat Villanova.
Okay.
It's a great time of year.
You can tell right away. I've given it away. I don't do the brackets.
You're a hockey guy.
But like, listen, I don't even, I think I admitted this last year. I don't own a stitch of green either. So I would have worn, so I'm here with the Believe sweatshirt on again.
So, have yourself a pint of Guinness, I guess you'll be celebrating enough.
Well, listen, I did change. We had a very rare Friday recording for this week's guest. And I was in the same Believe attire, but I was out on a morning run, and it made me reflect on today's guest, because, you know, I got in a panic because my Apple Watch got down to 14%. I got a little pop up, just like you just mentioned on your device, that my watch was about to run out of battery. So I hurried up to get back and get showered and get ready for this podcast. But it made me really think about how these wearable devices can really, still really kind of motivate me some 16 years out after my stroke. And we're going to lead into our guest here in a little bit and draw some comparisons. But is there anything you want to, before I introduce the guest and read his bio, is there anything that was in the news that you wanted to cover before we jump in?
I think this week, in spirit of it being Paddy's Day, there was a great event over in Dublin, hosted by the European Life Stroke Alliance for Europe. And I think they're in their third year now of running a life after stroke forum. And a lot of what we talk about today is around that lack of support. And obviously, we've talked about this on many episodes, right? But just the need for one, like, ownership at that level of district, this large community. I think we threw some numbers out there. I mean, there's millions of survivors that really have nowhere to turn and no set, like, group that is, working at a government level, working at a level with local support groups and hospital systems to really try to drive some of this much needed change here in the US. But in Europe, they've done a fantastic job at kind of breaking down some of these silos and actually getting survivors at the table with clinicians and government folks to talk about these systemic issues. So that event happened earlier this week in Dublin. Avril Drummond, who is one of our previous guests, she so she had a couple presentations there. I think it just goes to show that there is a model out there that we hopefully in the States could replicate. But really just wanted to kind of give them the limelight of the great work that they're doing. And if you go over to their website, we'll throw it in the show notes. I believe they'll have some recordings up over the next week or two that you could go back and listen to. But yeah, I mean, whether you are in, the sunny villas in Spain, or in the cold countries of Eastern Europe, or here, in the US, like these problems persist everywhere. But it's great to see what they're doing, and from a European context. And would have been lovely to get over to Dublin for the event, but
We especially when they announced that, we were waiting to see because it was Barcelona the year before, right? It's a, and then this year I knew you were I was expecting a note as soon as I saw them announce that date because I know that countryside is near and dear, and you're going to be making a return visit there soon. I'm hearing so maybe one day, Mike. Maybe one day, but that transition, and we've been following that progress closely because we were hoping that maybe we can have an impact in having something similar here in the States. And today's guest, you'll hear him echo sort of some of those sentiments, and especially in regards to life after stroke, young or old, those same barriers in connecting care, upon discharge are there. But in particular, in the case of a young stroke survivor, the individual we're going to be inviting in here, his name is Rory Pollera, and Rory and I connected going back about a year ago, and he was back in Boston here in our, I got a note from my neurologist asking if I would speak to Rory because he was looking for more after discharge. And our stories are very similar in terms of not only sort of the area of the brain was insulted, but around the same age when we had our stroke. So I want to just read a brief intro. No one can tell your story better than yourself. So Rory will, when we get him in the room, will kind of give us more detail about his journey. But just briefly, Rory suffered multiple ischemic strokes at the age of 36. So back in 2022 is when he had his first stroke. And he mentions that he didn't find much information for people like himself. His caregivers or even, his clinicians that were key to his recovery really, as you'll hear him tell, didn't really know what to do with him. And you'll hear him talk about the type of stroke that he had from a vertebral artery dissection. And he had that, caused him to have over a 2 week period, 3 to 4 ischemic type strokes. A neurologist in Dallas explained to him he had about a 14% chance of reoccurrence. And that's not uncommon. And after 31 days in hospitals and rehabilitation facilities and dozens of doctor's appointments and 16 months in doing outpatient rehab and recovery across multiple states, 4, in fact, he'll tell you it nearly brought him back to life, back from the dead, as he says, and able to walk down the aisle and dance the night away finally at his wedding. That just happened back in June of 2023. And I met him in between those times where He was looking to, I think at the time he was trying to get into Spalding, but we were really talking about what's possible after stroke. And you'll hear him talk about, you know, sort of the things that really stuck with him, and a lot of the statements that some of the clinicians and care teams either work to lift him up or pull him down. And even you'll hear him how some of those statements, those negative statements, actually motivated him.
Yeah, really well put, David. You know, I think as you listen to Rory, you know, the one thing that really stuck out to me was just, you know, his mindset, you know, and to your, you know, as you're saying, like the, you know, whether that's, you know, positive feedback he's hearing, then the motivation that he's getting from the support system that he had, or kind of the times that he was getting pulled down, you know, by some negative, you know, feedback, like he just kept that tenacious mindset, as he puts it, you know. But, you know, that's hard. That's hard for people, right? Like, yeah, to have that mental toughness in a situation like that. Obviously, he had his support system. He had some prior knowledge of, you know, what he'll speak around, kind of the way he hacked his way through rehab and kind of collected all this data. Yeah, that's rare, right? So, yeah, you know, as you're listening to this, you know, it's okay to not be a Rory, right? But, you know, I hope, you know, as you're listening, you know, whether you're going back and, you know, thinking through your rehab process as a stroke survivor, or how you supported as a caregiver, or whether you're fresh into this, right?
Right.
Like, Rory is a unique example of someone who fought his way, didn't take no for an answer, and has made a remarkable recovery and still has progress to go. But again, everyone is their own individual. Everyone is dealing with these things differently, right? But hopefully you could take little pieces out of this conversation and some of the ways that he, you know, motivated himself through the process, and take that into your own recovery. Because, you know, I think what he is doing is what every survivor should be enabled to do, right? And a lot of what he has access to, you know, whether, you know, through the Apple Watch, the Peloton, access into some of these classes, that's, again, not for everyone. But I think it goes to show, you know, a lot of what we've talked about over the last few years, David, you know, with wearable devices and, yep, tracking your data, like, there is something there, right? But again, it needs to be enabled. Need the care team, you know, your care team needs to be enabling you to kind of get set up, understand the importance, understand how to incorporate some of these things into your rehab journey. And we're just not there yet, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know it. My mom uses her Apple Watch for, you know, fall detection, tracking steps, and that's great, right? Like, I'm really proud of what she does to use that as a way to, again, track her progress, motivate herself. But yeah, it is a unique, you know, like, it is not, you know, not everyone's going to be out there doing that, nor could afford to go buy a new Apple Watch and use all these things to track yourselves. But I think what it shows is, like, whether you're using an Apple Watch, a piece of paper, you know, carving a little thing on the telephone pole that you've walked across, you know, to kind of show that progress, right? It's like, it's measuring progress. It's watching yourself. I love the example that he gave of, like, recording himself, right? Yep. I go back and think about, like, you know, my basketball background, right? Like, watching film is so important, right? Because you're able to have, you know, you step out of, you know, yourself, you could watch yourself and see how you're taking that step past the defender and what more you could, you're right. And, like, yeah, kind of make those critiques. So yeah, I just think overall, you know, there's so many great tidbits that you could take out of this conversation today, and implant that into your own rehab, but it doesn't need to be everything, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
No, absolutely. And it can be simple. And I'm glad you brought that point out about you'd used it to enhance your athletic training and your ability to see those fine changes that you might need to adjust your game plan. And, Going back, in terms of talking about the parallels in Lori's story, he talks about how the Apple Watch was really transformative and helping him dive in, and he had been using it slightly before his stroke. And I was thinking back to the year after my stroke, the iPhone came out, Mike, and the fact that you could have a camera in your pocket, for me, my gait was affected. I broke down the screen, and I was looking, because I was looking from month one to year one, some of those subtle changes, and I actually would split the screen and show myself walking. And Rory did some really interesting things, and he'll talk about something like really diving into the pillars of health and the things that he can do now to take back control and using the data to drive some of the subtle changes he'd make in his own recovery. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, and you're absolutely right. Do you have to go high tech? Absolutely not, but this is an option, and the technology is now here. And I think we can be, I think we're just on that tip of the iceberg on what we can be doing it to empower stroke survivors if you use properly.
Yeah. Now you said it was a year after your stroke that the telephone was invented.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah, I knew I've set myself up. Yep. Okay. The iPhone, Mike. The
Okay. First.
telephone in your pocket with a camera. And I tapped into that camera in the video. But thanks again for reminding me that there is a gap in age between us. But I
Slight.
believe, just like my sweatshirt says, that the possibility is there for even an old individual like myself to get more out of recovery using
You've
AI.
proved it, sir. You've proved it.
Thank
You've
you.
proved it. All right. Well, let's get into this one, David.
Well, let's welcome in Rory Pollera. Hi, Rory. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, David, thanks for having me.
Rory, we met going back, what was it, maybe close to a year ago, right? Initially.
Just about a year ago, yeah, when I was making my way back to Boston after an interesting experience.
So we I'm so glad that things have worked out and that we're able to meet again and have you on today to share your story. You had a chance to meet Mike briefly before we turned the mics on, but I feel you have such a powerful story to tell, and I really want to just jump right in here and have you, tell the audience a little bit more about your story and your why.
Sure. So, I was 36 years old in August of 2022 when I suffered three to four ischemic strokes. They spanned a 2 week period, and the standard medicines and treatment methodologies seemed to not be working based on the physiology of what happened in my vascular system. I was hospitalized twice. I was in the hospital for 31 days total. I was in a rural environment, actually on vacation, planning my wedding in Idaho. During the second hospitalization, we found out that I had a vertebral artery dissection with a pseudoaneurysm that resulted in the multiple strokes occurring. And they spanned, like I said, over a 2 week period. I ended up having to go through the rehab process twice. And the strokes left me, from the hospital into rehab, unable to see clearly, unable to stand up on my own, balance myself, walk. And I had major swallow deficits where I was aspirating when consuming anything from thin liquids to chunky solids. It was a very tough time. And I spent on the order of 19 months in an analogy context, completing the hardest triathlon of my life. Like I said, I had to learn how to stand, balance, walk all over again. So the physical aspects were strenuous and beat me up, honestly speaking. Then I had to learn how to swallow and see. And having diplopia or double vision for 10 plus days was extremely challenging to even have the physical progress be made in that acute phase of treatment and recovery. And the swallowing aspects, I had to go through all these different types of speech language pathologist driven rehab techniques that I learned all about, to learn how to swallow so I wouldn't, endanger myself with aspirating and choking on the foods that I was consuming. So, it took me a month of acute care, 3 months of outpatient care, and then for the past 15 months, and it's still going, of nonstop recovery to continue the progress that was made in each of those three phases of the recovery process. Unfortunately for me, the doctors still don't know really what the root cause was for the strokes. I was pretty healthy leading up to the strokes. I was an ex-athlete, a lover of all outdoor things, just recovered from the pandemic where I spent most of my time outdoors in the mountains when the whole world shut down. I didn't have any comorbidities like obesity, diabetes, and hypertension, so I was lucky that I was somewhat health conscious and healthy. But the doctors know physiologically what happened, that I had, you know, a dissection with a pseudoaneurysm, but what caused the dissection? And that inconclusive result has been, you know, very challenging for me to process and work through significant lifestyle changes associated with the recovery process. One thing I found in my whole stroke experience is I lived by a lot of mottos, and I may quote some of those other mottos. And one of those in the whole triathlon or big picture of my recovery has been really by North Face, is one of their themes of never stop exploring. And I kind of still live by that to this day, among many things like the shirt you're wearing there, David, with Believe. Ted Lasso is one of my favorites. So I love a lot of the methodologies and mottos that come out of that show is feel good, pick you up, keep you going, because those motivations are so critical. From my motivation side, I don't know where the burning desire from me came within. I'm highly charged and very competitive as an athlete. Very often I kept saying, every time a physical therapist said, you know, your left foot's got to go there, I would say, oh, challenge accepted. Okay, I'll do that. Let's go. You know, let's do that and figure that out. But some of those challenge accepted thoughts were not just progress. They were driven by some negative opinions or negative comments or things that were said to me, like multiple doctors and even friends had said things. You know, one of my doctors said, oh, only one of my patients has successfully lost the required weight to resolve their sleep apnea. I got sleep apnea as a byproduct of the strokes. Maybe I had it pre-stroke. Again, I wasn't obese or having some other comorbidities that typically results in sleep apnea. I didn't snore either. So when a doctor says, well, not a lot of people can lose the requisite weight to resolve their sleep apnea naturally, that was kind of like, challenge accepted. I'll take you on. Let's go. Similarly, you know, one of the neuropsychologists, as I was trying to work on my mental health, because mental toughness is so critical in recovery, one of the neuropsychologists said to me in writing in an email, oh, my only concern about working with you is that you'll actually remember your appointments. Kick a man when he's down already, you know, like, so these kinds of things were charging me, like helping the blood boil in a positive way that I could convert that into motivational energy to keep going. And so I found myself falling back on some of the motives internally. You know, maybe I really like to prove people wrong. Maybe that's just something I want to defy gravity or beat the odds and whatever it may be. So maybe I should have gambled or been a lawyer. I don't know. But some of that motivation that just is inside of me kept me going in that way when people would challenge me in ways that I didn't like. Similarly, I kind of think it's such a deep question. It's hard to answer why. And you know, maybe since I knew what my life was pre-stroke, I had an expectation, which could be a good and bad thing. I wanted to get back, knowing where it was. I wanted to get back as close to as possible as I could, given the constraints and deficits and things I had to work through. Maybe that was just enough to get me left foot in front of the other, you know, one foot in front of the other. Keep going. I keep moving. I keep driving towards progress. You know, no matter what it was, I just wanted to give it my all. So I didn't have to necessarily be an athlete to drive that, because I found a lot of people motivating me. The emotional support was a big piece too. My wife dropped everything. Her parents, my in-laws, dropped everything they were doing because we were in a remote location in Idaho planning our wedding, which is a positive thing. They dropped everything for the next month to be every single day with me in the hospital. And that is enough to remind you that, you know, keep going, man. Like, we can't take that. I can't take that for granted. So there's a lot of stuff. And I think as I kind of work through my story, it's a complicated one. There was some inconclusive natures of, you know, there's not all the answers straight in terms of what actually happened to cause that experience. But what I do know is I'm lucky to be where I am and have a lot of incredible support from people that challenge me in a positive way, not knowing it, they're saying negative things, but I'm turning it into motivation and energy to drive towards a goal of what I want my life to look like as a survivor. And hopefully, in your guys' terminology, a thriver post-stroke.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Enjoying this episode, Mike and I would like to remind you we now have a show supporter option on our website. Follow the heart button to help support us and continue to make great content possible. We'll give you a shout out on the show too when you do. We appreciate your generosity.
I love that mindset, and you know, you spoke to a lot of things there that, you know, resonate a lot with Dave and I, and the past conversations that we've had around, you know, training like an athlete within, you know, this next step within your journey, and treating rehab as if, you know, you are an athlete and you need to keep those reps and be challenged. But the biggest thing I want to kind of touch on the mindset aspect, right? And go to one of David's favorite questions that he's brought up a couple times when we've interviewed other survivors. It's, you know, kind of bring us back to that initial moment. You know, you're sitting in the hospital in a remote part of Idaho. You're newly engaged, right? And you've just learned that you've had a stroke, and you know, then to come out multiple strokes within that short period in the hospital. Like, what would be, like, what adjectives come to mind when you go back to that time and place? And how have those, like, have those adjectives changed for your feeling of, like, being a stroke survivor? Like, are you in a new place now when you think about your life and again, the journey that you've been on?
I think that's a great question, Mike. I think, like, for me, the adjectives that come to mind would be tenacious, competitive, agile. Also, just a mindset of no is not an answer. Maybe I've been told no so many times that I just find ways to weasel around it, whether it's from parenting as being a child to everything and raising money for my career professionally or whatever it may be. You know, I definitely don't think that's changed. I think maybe some of the personality aspects of who I am have really helped me thrive through this experience, which goes back to a story where my brother came and surprised me in my first rehab stay. And as I was going through this whole process, he surprised me. I didn't know his baby was due on the day I was in rehab, and he shows up in the hospital or the rehab center. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Your first son is about to be born. Your wife's going through this experience. Why are you here? He goes, I just wanted to make sure you're okay. I said, okay. And he goes, I just wanted to leave you this one thing. You were made for this. That just put me into tears. What does that mean? But the reality is he's going back in our relationship as kids of how we were raised, the sports and our drive and motivation and our tenacity to want to accomplish something. And so that really just sunk in where it was like, oh, you know what? I trained the 10,000 hour concept. I trained so many hours for hockey, for baseball, for the sports that I competed in and did reasonably well in. But the reality is that was just a training ground for something real and something really significant like life, where I couldn't control the strokes happening, but I could control the outcome to some extent. And I was destined to make that happen.
Rory, you brought up something there that, you know, making me think back to my own encounter too, but with some people that you may have surprised you in the words that just are so impactful. And some of them maybe were folks that you were like, I didn't think that they would get it, but like that, like your, like those words from your brother, probably came at a time when you probably needed it. Right. And were there any other, I know I, the other thing I'm thinking off the top too, is, you know, as you go into detail here about your story, is that I remember you had mentioned to me, you know, we saw similar area of the brain, different pathology. We don't know, again, the term cryptogenic. I'm sure you heard that term used. I hate that term, just like Mike and I hate plateau. But you know, it reminded me of something you asked me early on when I think you might've asked a doctor about returning to skiing someday. First I'll ask, and I just said, you know, how do we know what's possible now? Right. And I just remember, like, prove them wrong. I think I said something to the effect of, it's so early in recovery that you had that spark that just from that first conversation, like, prove them wrong. Is that still on your radar? Where have you been with I know we're going to get into a little bit more on your rehab side, but your balance was definitely affected like mine. Talk to us a little bit more about how that part of going after goals is going.
It's still very real, and I still very live by that philosophy daily. On the skiing aspect, I have not shred the gnar. I have not hit the slopes again. I have not gotten out there. It'll come. The day will come. And it's you got to crawl, walk, run, right? And so I've really prioritized getting back on my feet and building the level of independence so that I could do the critical things like walk down the aisle and pick my baby up and be present and helpful with the 500 bags you got to pack because now you got a kid and extra cargo when you got to travel. And so I've tried to put it together and piecewise it, knowing that those days will come. On those challenges that I've accepted, I have lost 30 pounds to date. So I've actually lost the requisite weight to get off a CPAP machine and have sleep apnea treated. I found a different therapist to work through, and the one said, "Oh, your memory, you can't, you know, I'm worried about you not showing up." Well, you know, forget it. On to the next one. Carry on. Skiing, running, even riding I ride a stationary bike regularly to build the confidence and strength so that I can take the training wheels off eventually. And so I've just prioritized aspects of my recovery so that I will get there. And that's never going to die in me. And that fire is still very, very present and very real. And I've gone jogging. I haven't gone running yet, but I'll get to that point of feeling confident and comfortable. I will take the training wheels off and take a stationary bike on the road at some point. I just don't trust other people at this stage. Okay. Traffic's crazy. We all get that. We'll get there. And then similarly on the mountain, when I have a chance, I will definitely hit the slopes again and will not stop without at least trying and giving it my 100% all.
Well, there's no doubt we'll get see you out there one day, and it's great to hear that. I mean, again, it goes back to that mindset you have, right? And it's evident. You mentioned your professional career as well, right? The tenacity that you have in a startup culture, right? To be here, like you hear 100 yeses, and it's continuing to kind of have that strong mindset to fight through because you believe in what that path is. And going back to your rehab journey and the milestone, as you thought through your milestone, or sorry, think back to some of the most important milestones to you. Like, what was, one of the first point like that one of those first milestones that really stuck out in your rehab journey? And again, like, really, what did that mean to you to have that first one? Because it right kind of same thing in a business perspective, right? It's that first yes, it's that first amount of fundraising coming in, right? And it sparks, it gives you that energy. So bring us back to that point and walk us through that first milestone.
So one of the most disruptive things for me personally from the strokes, besides not being able to stand up and balance and feel comfortable, there's tools and aids for that. Walkers, wheelchairs, things that can help you get around. For me, my strokes hit both my medulla and my cerebellum. And there were major vision deficits. I had nystagmus and diplopia significantly for the days following the strokes. And so put all the physical stuff aside. If I can't see straight, I can't process the world and be comfortable and confident in the world that I'm living in without seeing it or understanding what the new way to interpret what I'm seeing is. And so for me, there were very few aids for vision deficits, right? Like you can have corrective lenses and maybe there's prism glasses and certain corrective lenses you can really get into if it's a prolonged thing, but I had double vision for 10 days. And so that lasted the first 3 nights that I was in the hospital and the first 7 of 10 days that I was in rehab. So it wasn't towards discharge of the first rehab stay that I finally start to get my vision back. And that to me was so significant because once I started to not having to close one eye and wear an eye patch and do things to try and work around it, I started to realize I'm healing. Some aspects of my brain are starting to heal, which gives me confidence that I'm getting better. And even if I'm not healed and I'm not better and I'm not fully fixed or whatever it may be, we had so much uncertainty, surgeries, not all these things, at least I was making progress in that way and I could notice it and recognize it. And that was very, very significant to, again, keep the fire burning so that you're like, oh, progress is being made. It's working towards a goal. I'm getting better. Maybe they're going to move me towards discharge. Maybe I'm going to start to work towards that independence. It's just like in the hospital when you're, you know, not to elaborate even more, but like you lose a lot of your independence. Like you're on a bed rest. You got to call a nurse to help you get to the bathroom, right? Because you're at a fall risk. And so those kinds of milestones really, even though they're sequential and they're incremental, each baby step, the first one was the vision. Even though I was walking without a walker with double vision, the vision was really something that gave me the hope that something is healing inside of my brain because I can start to see the world again and process the world again.
So as your vision started to come more online, and take us to that next step in terms of how were you measuring your progress with your steps, with your mobility?
Totally. So the next milestone after the vision started to come back was really, you know, I'm probably annoying for a physical therapist. So David, you probably, you could maybe relate to this. The person asks a million questions. I'm like, what are you doing? What are we measuring? What are we testing? What are we doing? I was always asking because I wanted to know. And as a data geek and a data nerd, I wanted to know, what are you guys measuring as part of this recovery process? So once the vision came back, things started to sink in. I'm starting to understand, oh, what kind of tests are you doing? What are you measuring? Well, the FGA or that functional gait assessment and things that are happening, we can measure things. How long does it take you to stand up, sit, walk across the hall and back and sit down? And is that making you safe to translate into crossing a crosswalk in a street, right? And so I started to ask those questions and learn those questions about the physical aspect and use that information to inform, okay, they baseline me and here's where I am. And so learning as the recovery process continued, it's not just on the physical therapy side, even on the speech language pathology side for my swallow studies, I was like doing tongue pushups. Imagine that. I was doing tongue pushups to build the strength in my laryngeal and my vocal folds so that I could safely consume food. And so half of my stroke recovery was eating just to exercise those muscles, which caused me to gain a ton of weight, unfortunately. But hey, that's okay. For once, the hospital food was good. But that kind of measured evaluation and progress helped me as someone see that progress beyond visually. Once I got my vision back, now I could see all the metrics and measurements that the therapist and physiatrist and team were tracking to see this guy's getting closer towards, let's get him out of here and move him on to that next phase.
You know, I think when you think about that journey, right, you're in the hospital and there are these resources there for you. There's the PTs, you have your OTs, you have your speech and language therapists, you have your team there, right? And they're providing you this data. You could ask these questions, you're getting this feedback, right? And now your mind's, again, you said you're a data nerd, right? So your mind's racing. And again, as a data guy, and as you know, someone who I'm sure you know numbers, right? It's being able to say, all right, I get to this data point, right? And I know I'm, to your point, like I'm safe to do this. I like, and you're able to see that improvement. You're able, because you know, a lot of it, you could look in the mirror and you know, you might see some changes, but you know, really being able to see that data and those improvements, I mean, that's another marker. But talk to us now, once you've been discharged and now you're going home, right? Like, obviously we know, we've covered in our past episodes, like we know that drop, and once you've gotten discharged, that's where a lot of this support falls on its face, right? You're now left to your own. You have your pamphlet there that you showed, you know, us before we started this. And a lot of it's in your hands. But I think what's really interesting about your story is just how you just took all that into, you know, your own motivation, your own background, and put together your plan. So please share, you know, with the audience, like how you, and I think David said it before, you know, hacked your own rehab, right? And really used these data points to measure your improvements.
Totally. And this is kind of something I've become on the side passionate about. And it's a coincidence that I bought my first Apple Watch in 2019. And I was somewhat health conscious at that time. But again, you don't realize the things you're doing until you really need them. And in this case, like I asked all the questions in the therapy process, so, or in the rehab and recovery process immediately following the first hospitalization, so that I could build my own playbook. Because I knew when they sat and made me read this thing that says, here's your stroke recovery playbook, and it's all the facts about what a stroke is, what the statistics are tied to it. And then there's YouTube videos they recommend. Oh, you know, go learn how to do lunges and things for balance. Important, extremely important. But that's not going to get me back to running, to biking, to skiing even. And so I knew that there's a huge gap. And even though I asked all the questions, I was working within the constraints of what the acute phase of rehab was, I knew I had to do more. And so like I crawl, walk, run through the rehab process and appreciate, oh, vision came back, boom, progress. Oh, then we started doing tongue pushups. We measure that progress. Oh, we can do the FGA and translate to the real world progress. What do I need to do at home? And so my goals were really simple. Get healthy enough to celebrate a party in October. What does that mean? We were having an engagement party in October following the stroke. So I wanted to be healthy enough to walk around without a walker or mountaineering sticks or whatever it was. Trekking poles is what I was looking for. So I wanted to make sure that I was healthy enough to be able to facilitate conversations and enjoy the company of people that wanted to celebrate with me. And so in the acute phase, I was really setting up tools. What can I do to measure my progress, to build the confidence to go for a walk on my own in the neighborhood, and then take that walk from around the block to a mile down the street? And how do we measure that? Well, I used an Apple Watch with a wearable device. I recorded all my activity levels. As I continued to have progress, I'm like, what can I do next to push my heart rate? Because I really want to get my cardio going. Well, stationary bikes, Pelotons are expensive, but I see one in the back of your screen there, Mike. You know, I got a Peloton and I needed that structural support because of my balance being a little bit off. So it gave me a great vehicle for getting on a bike and riding a stationary bike and using it, because all the data that comes with Peloton is incredible. You can track your heart rate if you have the wearable device. You can track, you know, your Strive score. You can track how many miles you're going. What's the zones of your heart rate that are being pushed to what levels? You can play video games essentially to make it more enjoyable and interactive and fun without, you know, having an instructor bore you after some time. So there's a variety of ways that you can collect good information that helps you look at your heart rate, that looks at you know your cadence and the beat at which you're pushing yourself. And so I then got into a Peloton, and then the ENT that challenged me, you got to lose weight. I'm like, okay, duh. How do you lose weight? Well, there's a lot of different, the market's saturated. There's a lot of different tools. I got a simple one through my health insurance so I could track my weight, just track it, and then count my calories so that I could at least see the amount of things I'm consuming that may or may not be nutritious and valuable for me to recover. Maybe I should be being more diligent about the things that I'm eating and consuming and not go heavy on the carbs that may inflate or upset my gut and my stomach. And so then I got into that I got an app for that. I got another app for my sleep. The sleep apnea is a big thing. And so I got what's now a sensitive Apple Watch that has the oxygen sensor that is available, but I use that. I started with a pulse oximeter. I'm like, what do we do in the hospital? You wear the pulse oximeter. So I started with that kind of medical device to wear and see how my heart was, or see how my oxygen levels were in my blood throughout the night. And then I got the new Apple Watch and things got a little bit better because I got an app for tracking my sleep. Sleep is so critical in stroke recovery. And unfortunately, for those that have been close to it, know that you don't get good sleep in a hospital, period. They're sticking your arm every couple hours, right? They're getting up out of bed. They're pushing in the rehab process with the therapies. You're not getting that restorative sleep that's critical. And so I knew coming out of the hospital, it's a relief, it's independence, but at the same token, what's most important? Activity levels, nutrition, and sleep. And then once I got those things down, months down the road, I'm like, how do we push this high intensity levels up? And that's when I got into adaptive CrossFit and other things that I used to really, again, take me to that next level of getting the recovery process towards a higher level of performance that I didn't want to stop with just the point of discharge per se.
I think, Rory, thank you for sharing that. And you bring up some great points too. And it's so impressive when, because you took me into layers of some of the data that you are tracking, the way you were able to put that all together. Like, we know now, you know, healthcare technology, it could empower more individuals to sort of take charge of their health the way that you did. As Mike mentioned, there's that drop off in care. So you took it to that next level, and you mentioned how powerful just even having the bike or having the Apple Watch in itself can kind of help you analyze and look at what areas you might need to be improving on. You also showed me some videos, and to me, and this is always something I encourage my patients to do too, to this day. Did you look back at some of that data? Because there are points when you hit a plateau, and I know, Mike, we don't like using that word, but there are points where you think that you need to get to that next level. Did you look back at, so when you showed me some of the videos showing how what you were using for assistive device initially and what you were doing transitioning in the home. There was one video particularly showed me that you were out at, it looked like in your backyard, and you were doing a higher step gait, but you were pushing your gait. I'll have to ask you, are you looking at videos like that today and measuring, or is your watch really the big tool that you're using to manage and help measure?
I love to look back at the videos to see where I was and where I am, because it's again motivation for take plateau out of it. We can, like, even if you're healthy, you can get healthier. Even if you didn't have a stroke, you can always improve your health, whether it's building more, toning your muscles or whatever it may be. There's a way for continuous improvement. I'm a big firm believer that there's always a way to improve. And so I don't necessarily film my gait in the same from the same lens in the same context that I was before, because I feel pretty good about it. I think if I start a new activity like riding a bike or skiing, I want to see how fluid and smooth that looks to help me build the confidence that I need to feel comfortable again on my feet. I still have the shower seat in my closet that I had to sit on to take my showers post first rehab discharge. So I still have the stuff around, and those aids are just reminders of how fragile things were, but how much progress can be made to move you in a direction. I think the watch has evolved so much. One more point on that is that, like, Apple can measure the stability of your walks and your walking. And so I can go back, and I actually go back and compare when I had my stroke, because I had the watch since October of 2019, which predates my stroke. It's nice to see some of the limited data. They continue to develop and innovate on the fly, which is fantastic. But I like to look back and see, like, does that data exist? Like, my heart rate, resting heart rate pre-stroke, on the order of 60 to 62 beats per minute. As soon as I had my stroke, went up 10 beats per minute. It was in the 70s. And it stayed high because my body was so stressed and so, in that such an acute recovery phase, I'm sure there was some things going on in my vascular system that was the clots, blockages, right? Your heart's got to work harder to move the blood through your body. And so then I gained weight, and that inflames things, right? And so I can see the causal relationships of the metrics I'm seeing and try and process and understand what was happening physiologically to then see, well, if we improve that, my heart rate's back to 60 beats per minute resting. I've lost 30 pounds. I'm sure that adds to the equation. It's also been 19 months post-stroke, and I've put a lot of work into using all these other data and metrics to help me drive myself towards. So there's information I use. The videos are super informative when trying a new skill and building the confidence and strength to overcome that transition period. But then once I reach some form of comfort and confidence with walking, like I said, when I get into hopefully bike riding, not on the stationary bike, or running, or skiing, I'll definitely use it again, because it's really impactful and helpful.
And all this data, right? Like, you've been fortunate that, one, your background, I think, like, as an athlete, right? You've probably tracked some of this prior to your stroke. You understood, right? Like, what key things to be looking at. Like, how involved is your care team, right? Like, some of your PTs, OTs. I know you're now working with just the trainer, more on the high intensity exercise that you're doing. Are you kind of interpreting and making changes to your own personal rehab and just overall fitness based on what you're interpreting? Or do you have any kind of conversations, like sharing this data with your team to kind of inform them? Because I think that's where the biggest gap is with all this, right? Like, if we had a way that, this day you're everyone could be given across an Apple Watch, right? And have the ability for the data to kind of go back to the care team. That's the North Star. But how are you kind of working with your team right now to inform some of, your next steps?
It's a great question. I think unfortunately, only one doctor has taken the time to look at the data in one of my apps. And that's not they're bad or whatever. It's more so just like one actually was very curious to see what kind of information is this guy can connect, you know, collecting, and how is he interpreting this? Most of the time I use it as ammunition for when I go into the appointments. Here's the pulse of what's going on. Let me give you the download. And I just download the README file and tell them, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. What do you think? Where are you at? How are you processing this? Is this, besides your physical and emotional and everything assessments you're doing with me, is this fitting into what you're observing? And so, because I don't want to bias their opinions, of course, because I want them to do their biased opinions. But one doctor looked at the data, and it was tied to my sleep apnea. And I had done countless at-home sleep apnea tests to see, do I have obstructive and central sleep apnea, and what's the breakdown, and what's this and that. And I was like, look, my oxygen levels on the sleep app that I'm using, Auto Sleep, are very clear. My oxygen's plummeting throughout the night, and that's causing me to have these episodes, which I had for 4 months, where I would wake up frantic, not knowing which way was up and down. Can we get a CPAP machine so we can fix this problem, please? And that data was able to inform treatment. There is treatment. They didn't need the data to form that in treatment because we could still do the in-home sleep studies, and they still showed the need for it. But it's actually just given me the ammunition to go into these conversations with doctors and therapists and folks saying, here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm doing. Is this useful information? And most of the time they're going to do their observations, and it's maybe not fully incorporated into their treatment and practice today. But I'm hoping, like the All of Us program, you know, run at the national level, this kind of information will inform changes in how people are not only just dealing with stroke recovery, other forms of recovery, and other forms of natural health and wellness, well-being, period.
Rory, now that you know, Mike had asked you early on about to describe those adjectives about where you were, where you are now. You've definitely taken charge of your own recovery at this point, and I know there are milestones still that you want to hit. Reflecting back and maybe even looking forward, what most bothersome for you with life after stroke?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge for me is the inconclusive nature of what happened. Why the heck did it happen? What was I doing wrong that caused this to happen? And maybe, you know, when a doctor says it's random, there was such a thing called a random dissection. That was hard for me to digest. And it still is hard for me to process because I want to convert. Data can be a good thing and a bad thing. You have bad, you know, you have good data that's informing things. You want to course correct accordingly. And what was I doing that caused this to happen? Was it something that I was, you know, unaware of or taking for granted or whatever? Or maybe it was truly random. I wanted to institute the lifestyle changes in my life so that I could make the right changes to mitigate it from happening again, because it's been really hard to focus on recovery living in fear. You don't know why it happened. It could happen again. And that's really challenging to live with, is that I had it. And whether you're older or my age, living in fear post-stroke is probably a common theme. That's why depression runs rampant for folks that are struggling to recover and get their lives back post-stroke. And so the inconclusive nature coupled with me being hungry to change and being young has made it very challenging and problematic, not problematic, but just very challenging to course correct the right way to see progress. So I just reverted back to my roots of all the things I know we should be doing. You should be getting sleep. You should be eating nutritious food. You know, you should be exercising and balancing. What are the key pillars of longevity, of a healthy, long life, stroke or no stroke? And that's what I've fallen back on, independent of having the inconclusive, what truly happened and caused this. Maybe there is a surgery I have to have someday. Yeah, I'll get it. I'll do it if the doctor's recommended and that's the right course of action. But at this point, you know, we're kind of sitting in a bubble of, it's up to you to set your own destiny. And I just kind of took it upon myself, take the data, run with it, try to work through the fear factor because it's real. It's very real. I've been to the hospital, unfortunately, in April of last year with a stroke scare when I just pushed it to a point of overdoing it. And that's on me. These are learning lessons. I had the strokes. I'm too knowledgeable now. And so I'm like, am I having another one? Freak out. Anxiety kicks in. Okay, we rush to the hospital and the doctors did all the CT and MRIs and everything. We're clear. But, you know, it's the process of working through that fear and normalizing that fear so that I can trust the process of knowing what's really happening and knowing my body better than anyone else.
If you had one tip, Rory, for survivors listening to this, their caregivers, or even
you know, therapists that are out there, right, that could relay this message to their patients, what would that be and why?
Can I have three? I have three. I have three recommendations or three tips. I the first and fundamental one to me is stroke recovery does not stop at discharge or when insurance says no more PTOT SLP therapy sessions, period. That could happen while you're in care. The hospital or your insurance may not approve you to go to rehab in the first place. Who knows, right? And so whatever the doctors say, you know, I was 36 years old and a doctor told me 18 months post-stroke, you'll start to plateau. I know you guys hate that word. I don't like it either because I don't believe that that's going to happen if I keep staying diligent on this. But the recovery really doesn't stop at discharge. When insurance company says no or the doctor says you don't need any more of us, this acute care, that's when it really kicked into high gear. And I, as the math geek that I am, I did the math. In the past 19 months, I took one step every 10 seconds, which translates to 4.5 million steps of progress, one foot in front of the other. Some were wobbly as heck, right, as I was in rehab, and others maybe not so much more recently. But that's 4.5 million steps in a year and a half. You know, that was 0.5% of my lifetime being 36 years of age. So it doesn't stop when discharge happens. That's kind of my first thing. The acute therapies in rehab, they work. They do what they're supposed to do. You know, you can travel all around the country. I did it. I was in Idaho. I went to Texas. I went to Boston. I'm seeking the best care. The reality is the process is the same. And so it was once I got through that acute phase in home is where the magic happened. And I had to keep pushing myself so that I could make it a reality. And back to the mantras and the mottos that I kind of live by, it's like going to a psychologist and them saying, I'm not going to fix the problems you're struggling with for you. You got to want to fix them. And that was kind of the theme that I lived by. And I would recommend, whether it's a survivor, a caregiver, or even a therapist, to help work with their patients, their loved ones, or them internally in themselves to find that burning desire deep within to keep pushing yourself over a long timeline and be patient with that process. The other two are simpler. It's mental health is critical. And I did a lot of counseling. And my one recommendation was one of my therapists said to me, treat your recovery like a triathlon. There's three sports. There's probably three phases of your recovery. You're going to have an acute phase where you're inpatient. You're going to have this outpatient phase where you're kind of transitioning back to your life, where you're getting still outpatient care for some time, depending on how good your insurance is or if you're paying out of pocket, whatever it may be. And then there's just going to be this in-home care phase of where you figure it out in home. How do you navigate this process, go back to work, and resume life on your own? And so treating it, breaking it up and treating it step by step, phase by phase has been really helpful for me because I actually mapped each of those phases to the three sports, swimming, running, and biking. And I was like, what I hate the most is swimming. I do not swim well. So I'm like, okay, that was acute. We're done. We swam already. And then I felt pretty confident, which the second phase in the outpatient, I was building that confidence and I felt the most confident and comfortable running. And so that was kind of my second phase. Like I knew it, I felt confident we could get there. We're going to keep going. And then the biking is where I'm stuck, right? And that's where I am now. And that's just going to be a heck of a long bike ride to keep going and going and going. And so breaking it down that way was really helpful to think about the phases of the, and the timeline is independent. It doesn't have to be like mine was 1 month inpatient. It could be 3 months inpatient. It could be 5 days inpatient, but just segmenting things and compartmentalizing things helped me process what was happening. And the last piece is really, that my third advice is really embrace the technicalities of the process. Not everybody is technically savvy. Not everybody has their cognition post-stroke, unfortunately, the same way they had it pre-stroke. And so between the survivor, the caregivers, and the therapists, there's a lot of technical elements that go into this. And I just wanted to embrace all of those and learn as much as I could so that I could inform myself because it was a training. It was ultimately training. Everything that I experienced inpatient and even outpatient was me to equip myself and give myself the ammunition I needed to go home and take all of those learnings with me because they were building blocks for me to then figure out how do I convert this into something useful. My story, 1 month inpatient, 3 months outpatient, most of my recovery happened, even though I was standing and walking and seeing in the inpatient phase. The normalcy of my life was recovered truly over a much longer time horizon in my home. And so I would say, you know, embrace that and take advantage of that. That's free training if your insurance company is paying for it, but it's a training and access to education that that could be invaluable tools for you to take with you when you leave.
I'm glad you covered all three of those. That's so well said, and so important, especially on the mental health component too. In my opinion, one of the most overlooked areas of stroke recovery. Rory, this has been great.
You had three strokes or four. So we had to give you,
yeah.
One per stroke. Perfect. I'll take it.
So we always end our discussion in each episode with our magic wand question. So if we gave you this magic wand to create a better stroke rehab experience, what would it look like for you?
My magic wand thoughts kind of, as a young stroke survivor, nothing about my experience was catered to me as a young person with a lot of life hypothetically left to live. And I would love to see a better job around catering to the young stroke survivor so they can feel confident and capable of thriving in a life after stroke. It's not just young. You can thrive after stroke as a 71-year-old average age or even older. But especially for the young people, we're at the bottom of the bell curve. I've been reading some research and educating myself. Like, the rate of young stroke survivors has nearly doubled in 30 years. So our system needs to see some paradigm shifts and change in how we're handling those young stroke survivors. And for me, as a millennial, the things that I want are connection to society, connection to people. I want to see people that have been through it to motivate me. And connecting with you, David, was invaluable to know that you were once in my shoes and look at you now. We all have deficits. We all have challenges. There are things that will live with us, but you made it work. And you know what? That's motivation to keep me going. And when I was in rehab, I was lucky to think that I was lucky to experience one of my physical therapists. She had a stroke when she, I believe she was 18 years of age. Seeing her and her saying to me, "You're going to be okay," is very different than someone who'd never had that experience before, play slapjack and play video games and work on the Dynavision and all the things we use and all the tools we use in rehab. It was a very different meaning. And so connecting to people that are surviving and thriving, that population of those people is increasing nationwide, if not worldwide. And so I would love to see an environment where, in a social network where, as part of that recovery and rehab process, we have connection to the outside world that's been there and done that. And that's the biggest gap that I'm seeing is just, you know, David, you and I, when we were talking the other day, we were like, 16 years ago, you had a stroke. Well, if 100 to 120,000 people have had strokes every year for 16 years, we're looking at almost 2 million people under the age of 50 that had strokes in between yours and mine. That's a lot of people. And some are luckier than others, and some have put in more work than others, and some have been, you know, capable of putting in more work. There may be more physical restraints or restrictions that don't allow them to have the progress in certain ways, but having access to that community of people, I would have loved to have sat and had in one of my OT sessions, get on a computer and try and look at the computer and function. Everything we do is on a video conference these days for those that aren't necessarily in a factory or doing certain types of jobs. So can we get a video chat with a stroke survivor as one of those sessions? How you doing? How you feeling? What's going on? What are you struggling with? And then pick them up, you know, or motivational videos that are recorded. I don't have the answer, but I would love to see a better connection to the outside world, especially for the young stroke survivor. Other than making me go sit with a bunch of older people that are dealing with orthopedic or stroke related issues in rehab and have dinner with them when I'm like, I can't see straight, I'm miserable as it can be, I got a bad attitude, and I'm really struggling in this particular moment. That socialization was not going to be the thing that was winning for me. It's a connection to a PT that had a stroke and others that that can encourage me that you'll get there. Keep going, keep putting in the work, keep doing it.
Yeah, Rory, that's, you know, so well said. And you know, agree that that's why I'll always pick up the phone for another survivor, because I was handed something very similar. When I was looking for support, and I've shared it on other episodes, I was told to go to a nursing home where there was a stroke support group. And, you know, at 39 years old, that just didn't resonate.
Yeah. And there's a lot of technologies out there. There's a lot of ways to do this. I would love to see more. It's not that the system is broken, and it's just there's always room to improve. And young or old, I think that kind of engagement on the mental health aspect can really pick people up when they're at their lowest points. And I experienced it. I was lucky in a remote place at Idaho to have a physical therapist that was 18 when she had a stroke, and she was in her 30s. And she's like, "You're doing great." Even though I'm falling over and looking goofy and working through that recovery process, those words really hit home.
Yeah.
And more of that, I think, is really going to pick people up, especially when they're struggling with these elements of recovery. And all that said, one of the biggest successes I've had outside of my own recovery has been joining this adaptive CrossFit program, because it's a whole community of stroke survivors. So working out one-on-one, but then having an exchange with other people that have had stroke or TBIs or things, it's great to be connected to a community. It feels weird at first. It always is. It's uncomfortable and awkward and weird. Yeah. But once you get the routine and you figure out who's who, even though we're not working out together, it's just nice to know other people are doing the same things. And that goes beyond the adaptive CrossFit. That goes to things happening. It's, you know, my neurologist sits and runs a young stroke survivor program, and it's nice to be connected to that community too. So there are pockets of this evolving, but that I wish my magic wand wish is get that into the rehab process. When it's the hardest phase of the triathlon, let's get that involved or included some way, somehow, so that people can take advantage of those benefits that pick them up instead of keep them down.
I think that's a great way to end. And you know, we're looking forward. I think the next episode here, we're going to be sitting down with your fitness coach, Jenna, the adaptive CrossFit program that you've been a part of. So it's going to be great to hear from her perspective, right? Like how the importance of building this community and share some stories from her success of that program. So looking forward to that. And just want to, again, thank you for your time today, Rory. I think a lot of, you know, what you spoke about there, especially towards the end with that mental health side and the connection, right? There is so much to be done, and it's simple connections, right? Of being able to, hopefully a listener has been able to come across this and be inspired by what you've brought to the conversation today. And, you know, just how you experienced, you know, the connection there to Dave and kind of gave you that lift, that bit of motivation. You know, hopefully we could inspire others to do the same here. So, you know, thank you for being a part of this today. It won't be the last. I think we'll have to get you back on after we see this clip of you coming down the slopes. Absolutely. Shredding gnar, I think, as you said.
Hopefully I'm not tumbling. Hopefully I'm not tumbling down the slopes and I'm skiing, but we'll more to come.
However you make it down, you know, you make it down. But yeah, totally. It's been a pleasure here.
Thank you, Rory.
You know, thank you again for your time.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the No Stroke Podcast. Be sure to tune in each week for more knowledge on stroke recovery in the brain with tips, technology, and interesting stroke thriver interviews where they share their success to enable you on your own healing journey. Make sure to hit the follow button on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our show. Mike and I will love to ask you to rate and review our show to enable us to grow our audience. Please check the show notes to follow us on social so you can connect and reach out to find more about advertising with us or becoming a guest on our show. Until next time, stay well, keep the faith, and keep moving forward.